It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. Did you get a chance to watch the RBC Heritage at Harbortown Golf Links over the past weekend? Normally, that tournament being right after the Masters doesn't really draw an exciting field, but this year it did, and Matt Fitzpatrick and Jordan Spieth put on a show. They both finished regulation at 267. That's 17 under par. Patrick Cantlay was in third at 268 at minus 16. We'll get to him in just a second. But Matt Fitzpatrick and Jordan Spieth went to sudden death. And in the first hole of the sudden death playoff, Jordan Spieth's birdie putt just narrowly missed dropping as it went around the hole and finished up behind it. While Matt Fitzpatrick ran his birdie putt past, he was able to make par. Jordan, of course, tapped in for par. Then they both parred the second playoff hole, which was number 17, the par 3. And then they come back to number 18 for the third playoff hole. Matt Fitzpatrick stuck his approach shot inches from the hole, a tap-in birdie for him. Jordan Spieth not able to make a birdie from the back right edge of the green. And Matt Fitzpatrick wins on the third playoff hole. He pockets $3.6 million and 500 FedEx Cup points. Jordan Spieth, for his second place finish, pockets $2.18 million. We talked about Patrick Cantlay a little earlier. He pocketed $1.38 million for his third place finish. Not bad over the weekend for those three. Matt Fitzpatrick winning the RBC Heritage there at Harbortown and knocking off Jordan Spieth, who tried to go back-to-back as he won it last season. Coming up on this edition of From the Short Grass, I sit down with David White, an accomplished junior golfer from the state of Arkansas who went on to play for Oklahoma and then transferred to Arkansas, where he was a standout on the Razorback golf team. He also got close to making it on the PGA Tour. You'll hear his story a little bit later on when we come back from the break. Before we hit the break, I want to tell you about our friends at Blackman Auctions. Thomas Blackman and the gang at Blackman Auctions, they know auctions. Find them on the web, blackmanauctions.com. Since 1938, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. We're back with David White after this. Stay with us.
With all the decisions you need to make about what to do in El Dorado, finding a place to stay is an easy one. The Haywood is uniquely positioned to make your stay one to treasure. Located in the historic Union Square District of El Dorado, the Haywood offers luxurious accommodations that feature contemporary, colorful rooms with high-quality bedding, comfortable baths with walk-in showers, and a spacious workspace with stylish plantation shutters that are unique additions to the stunning decor in a non-smoking environment. Make the Haywood your home away from home the next time you visit El Dorado.
This is Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. The economy is changing slowly but surely. The market is slowing down in a gradual slide. Not an emergency yet, the sky is not falling, but a change is coming. When times are good, auctions make buyers compete to buy at the highest market value. When the economy gets tough, auctions force buyers to make a purchase decision. Either way, auctions get the highest return for a seller and a strong deal for a buyer. With an experienced auction company, it's a simple process. Go to blackmanauctions.com for more information. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own. To seize opportunity. To anticipate rather than react. To deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world. And to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Shapp. David White grew up playing junior golf at Rebsman Golf Course in Little Rock, Arkansas. His dad, working for Stevens, would drop him off in the mornings and then pick him up in the afternoon on the way home from work. That is where David honed his craft and got lessons and was taught the game of golf. And he played with some friends as well, as you're about to hear in my sit-down interview with David White. So without further ado, on the tee, David White. David, thanks for joining me on From the Short Grass. Man, you're looking good. Family's all good and everything. How's life for David White?
Well, life is full. You know, we've got five kids that are doing everything from just going to school at Arkansas. Two sons up there. Got John David that's about to get married in May the 6th. And then we've got our 14-year-old Molly Kate, who is a volleyball girl and going to school at Little Rock Christian with her big brother, Walker. And, you know, Walker's had a crazy last 12 months and is getting set for his senior season in high school football. So everything's good.
It seems like you guys are the athletic family. Is that a good assumption?
Portrayal, I guess.
Or portrayal,
you know,
yeah.
We have a bunch of dads, two dads, John Reese and my dad, John White, that were both just great athletes. And I grew up loving sports. And Amy, my wife, you know, grew up very athletic. She's super athletic. So it was just natural that we wanted to have our kids in sports from a young age. They started down at Junior Deputy playing baseball, and that led into Life Champs, you know, Anthony Lucas and all that group that started that, Steve Snyder. And, you know, they just fell in love with sports from an early age and just kind of went from there. And then I was really disappointed in some ways that none of them really fell in love with golf.
I was going to say.
Yeah, because I was pretty sure having four sons that one of them would be on the PGA Tour someday.
Right, and you'd be out there watching
him
play.
And I'd be out there watching. But as it turns out, they all love team sports, and I couldn't be happier. They're fun to watch.
When did you first pick up a golf club?
Well, when I was 10 years old, my uncle, who's a sawmiller from Sparkman, introduced me to the game when I was 10, and we weren't members of a club. My dad didn't play golf, but he worked at Stevens and started down there with Mr. Jack and Mr. Witt. And so every summer, starting when I was 10, he would take me to Rebsman on his way to work. And he dropped me off at about 7 o'clock in the morning and picked me up on his way home from the office about 5:30 or 6. And I just spent the whole summer, you know, learning to play golf with guys like Chris Jenkins, Petey King. God, there were so many guys that would go down there. It was an amazing junior program that they had at Rebsman. And it was back when, you know, they had the range down there where you picked your own balls up. So mm-hmm. You go hit your balls and you go pick them up. I would probably do that 10 to 15 times a day, play 54 holes a day. It was so much fun. Great way to grow up. So that's when I started playing when I was 10.
That golf course back then, much different than it is now. I mean, the greens were no bigger than a postage stamp, basically.
Yeah. You know, it's been so long. My wife makes fun of me because I don't have a great memory. I don't even remember a whole lot about that golf course. Like you say, the greens were postage stamps at the time. My gosh, I know it's changed a lot. And especially the back nine is just so beautiful now compared to even what it was then. We did a lot of our playing on that little third nine, You know, where we'd stay out of the people's way. And, you know, when you're 10, 11, 12, people don't really want you in their way. Of course, as it turns out, we were better players than most of the guys out there already.
So, true.
Thanks to the junior program. But yeah, Rebsman was an amazing place to grow up. Their junior program was second to none.
Playing with Chris Jenkins and a Petey King, I mean, two guys there that are just known throughout the state as big-time, top-of-the-level golfers, and you yourself included in that, how were those matches like when you guys were growing up? Was there a lot of competition? Is that where you got the competitive edge?
It really is. You know, I was thinking about that just this morning, because I knew we were going to talk about golf and Rebsman, the competitive spirit that Rebsman fostered in so many guys is what led Arkansas golf to become great for a while. You know, you had guys like Chris Jenkins, like Ron Whitaker, like Jack O'Keefe. I mean, I could go down the list. There were so many good players. Greg Starkey, who you've probably never even heard of from Conway. There were so many good players. Rick Ayers, Robin Carroll, and a place like Rebsman where you had 20 or 30 guys every day competing, and we'd play for all sorts of different, you know, whether it was a cheeseburger after 36 holes or whatever it was, the competition that was created down there was what made us all really good. And there were a few that stood out, and those were the guys that loved it. You know, when you love something the way, like, for instance, the way I love to play golf and the way I love to practice and compete, it made you really good.
Growing up, for you, it wasn't cool to play the game of golf unless you were around those guys, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, I was at Rebsman from the time I was 10 until the time I was 15. And, you know, most of my friends were playing baseball or swimming or hanging out with friends and hanging out with girls and doing things that, you know, you think of are cool. To me, I didn't even think about it as, hey, this isn't a cool sport. I just loved it. But you're right. I mean, to love golf back in the early 80s, wasn't a cool thing. I mean, you looked at the clothes that the pros wear even at the time. They looked like a bunch of goobers out there. and you know, nowadays, you know, the Tiger effect really changed all of that. Now it is very cool. It's very cachet. There's so many great athletes now that play golf compared to when I was growing up.
Could you think back to that time, David, and think, wow, I didn't think that there would be a time where golfers would be pumping as much iron as they do now to try and stay in shape?
Yeah, and you know, there was such a paradigm shift, I think, and it was with Tiger. And now you see Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson and guys like that. Bigger, faster, stronger. There's not a sport alive where that's not better. Mm-hmm. And at the time, everybody thought in golf that, you didn't want to get bulked up. You didn't want to get tight. What bad advice that was for all of us. You know, you see the guys nowadays, they're so powerful. I mean, I could have been the same way. I mean, you hear like a guy like Lee Westwood from over there in Europe, and he says he doesn't lift any weights. He said he tried one time, but they were too heavy. So, you know, that's
my excuse.
Yeah, that's right. But that's the overall feeling about lifting weights and always has been. I'm glad it's changed because now I think you're going to see players playing longer. Hopefully they won't get hurt because they're too strong. You know what
sure,
I'm saying?
Sure.
But I wish I had lifted weights growing up. I played football at PA and played basketball. I wish I had been faster and stronger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'd have been good for everything.
When did you decide where you wanted to go to college?
At the time, I was one of the top players in high school in the country, and so I was being, you know, offered scholarships from Stanford to Florida State to Arizona State to Oklahoma. I ended up actually going to Oklahoma. Coming out of high school, Arkansas didn't really recruit me. Bill Woodley was the coach there at the time. And there were no scholarships available. There were only like 5 scholarships total. I think it's still kind of that way. So Greg Grost, who was the coach at Oklahoma, is good friends with the guy that was coaching me at the time, Dan Snyder. And that was just a natural fit. OU offered me a full ride back when there was no such thing as full scholarships in golf, basically.
Because
you had 12 guys, you had to divvy up 5 scholarships too. So anyway, my freshman year, I went to Oklahoma and loved it. But my sister was a cheerleader at Arkansas. I grew up a Razorback. After my freshman year of college, which was a really successful year for me on the golf course, I actually called Coach Woodley and said, "You got any scholarships available?" And he said, "I do." So I said, "Can I have it?" And it was as simple as that. So ultimately, going to Arkansas was a really easy decision for me because it's what I loved.
Yeah.
You know, even to this day, every time a Razorback game is on, it doesn't matter what sport it is, I'm watching it.
Is it hard to think about the facilities that they have up there now with the blessings and what Mr. Tyson has done for the golf program at Arkansas?
Hard to think about that, meaning we didn't have it?
Yeah.
We had a really good deal because Champions at the what it was called
is now
at the time,
Pinnacle
Country Club. They created,
but that was a little bit of a drive away from campus, though,
it
right?
was. But you know, I don't mind a little windshield time. It's kind of fun to think and ponder, and then on the way home, it's fun to either gloat or sulk based on whether you won or you lost the day. And it was super competitive on the Razorback golf team back then. You know, we had a bunch of All Americans, me, Jack O'Keefe, Dean Pappas, Brendan Pappas. My gosh, it was Bud Still. It was awesome. And so we had our own, area at Champions where we could go out there and take our shirts off and hit balls and chip around and nobody even saw us.
You literally took your shirts off.
Literally, we would practice with no shirts on. Dean Pappas would practice with no shirt on and a cowboy hat on with a dip in his mouth. So yeah, it was an awesome place. So we loved it. Yeah. So we don't feel like that we got the short end of the deal. I do love what they've done up there and what Mr. Tyson's done. And it's an incredible recruiting tool for Coach McMakin, and which, by the way, Brad McMakin was a teammate of mine when I was a freshman at Oklahoma.
Really?
Yep, he was a fifth-year
senior. Well, I knew he
senior.
Went to OU.
Yeah.
How about that?
That's right. And I took his spot, his fifth year senior. And then there at the end of the season, when we started into regionals and then the national championship, he beat me out. So I didn't go to regionals or national championship. So
when did you know that you were good, that you could compete on the junior level around the country?
When I was 15, I qualified for the U.S. Junior Amateur and what at the time was called the Big Eye Insurance Youth Classic. Those were two of the biggest tournaments in the country for junior players. And I made it, I think the junior amateur that year was at Yale University up in Connecticut. And I made it to the quarterfinals. And that's when I knew I was really good because I was playing against supposedly the best players in the country.
Right.
And, you know, I was already one of the best in Arkansas. And so when I realized, hey, I can play at this level too, that's when I kind of felt like I belong.
Was it easy for you going up? Were you nervous playing against those type of players?
Well, I was very competitive inside. And so, yeah, I was nervous, but I also wanted to see how I could do. And once I saw the other guys up there, I knew I was as good as them. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of calmed me down. And then, gosh, after that, it was just off to the races for me. I was never super consistent, but when I was playing good, I was playing as good as anyone.
Did you ever have aspirations, David, of the PGA Tour?
Yeah. I mean, after college, I went straight to tour school. Mm-hmm. Back then, there were three stages. You had to qualify locally and then sectionally, and then if you made it to the finals. And I missed the finals 3 years by one shot. And so I tried my best. I went overseas 3 years in a row to South Africa with Dean and Brendan, the Pappas boys, and a bunch of other guys. Because, you know, back then, if you made it through tour school's first stage, you were exempt for the South African tour, which was like January through March. And so it was a blast. I spent 3 months every year over there. Ron Whitaker actually won the South African Players Championship 1 year when we were over there and qualified for the World Series of Golf. So, yeah, it was fun. I had my chance. I just didn't quite get there. But I tried.
Do you think back now how your life would be different if you would have not lost out by a stroke?
Yeah. I don't think my life would be as rich because I've got five kids now that I get to spend every minute that I want to with, that I never have missed a game or even a lot of their practices. And so, you know, Amy asked me that before, you know, does it make you sad that you didn't make it? My kids have asked me that. And it's kind of fulfilling to know that the answer to that is no, I really don't. I really am glad the way things turned out. Would I have loved to prove to myself that I was good enough to win the Masters? Because I felt like there were times where I could play good enough to do stuff like that. But my life would have been on the road, and I'm a homeboy. I love being at home. I love seeing my kids and my wife. So
it's kind of interesting how God has a plan for everybody.
You bet, man. And I do believe that God has a plan. I mean, the Bible talks about it, a plan for welfare, not calamity, that we should have a future and a hope. And that's what I've based my life on. That's what my kids, I believe, have based their life on. And our family is really just really big believers in Jesus and that God does have a plan for all of us. And so I think that's worked out just fine.
Now, your kids don't play golf competitively, or maybe they do around. I mean, they're in team sports, like you said earlier, but do they all have a set of golf clubs, and does the White family go out and play golf?
They all have a set of golf clubs, and the White family does not go out and play golf. John David is going to be a player, and Zach might be a player. He's just got to get his mind going. He's got to actually get it in his mind that he's going to go out and practice and get better, because Zach hits the ball. I'm telling you, Zach carries the ball over 300 yards every time he hits a driver, but he doesn't know where it's going. John David is so competitive, it's unbelievable, and he's starting to play a lot. He's going to end up being a really good golfer. I don't know when, but he will be.
What about Walker?
Walker's a lot like Zach. He hits the ball a ton, and he's got a beautiful golf swing, but, you know, right now he just doesn't have any time to spend in golf, as you know, is a sport that you actually have to spend some time on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And Walker is Mr. Relationships guy. He wants to be, and you know, he wants to be throwing the ball to seven receivers all the time.
And I can understand that, especially now that where he's committed to, and the fact that Power Five SEC, Auburn University there for Hugh Freeze, and Hugh Freeze is a coach that loves the game of golf.
He does. I texted him about 2-3 weeks ago. He apparently won his flight with Coach Malzahn in a tournament down in Florida at Interlochen. So I told him I was a little bit jealous of of what he'd gotten to do that weekend, and he responded, yeah, it was a blast. I think he really loves to play. We've never really talked golf, but I'm looking forward to that.
No, he does love to play, and Coach Malzahn, when I had him on, he said that Hugh Freeze might be the best golfer that is a head football coach in the country.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, we'll just have to.
So you need to, yeah, hey, Grand National there at Auburn, next time you're down there, tell Coach Freeze, let's go play 18.
Well, that sounds good to me. I'll have to get that cleared with Amy, but yeah, because I might lose a little money if he's truly the best player.
I don't think you're going to lose any money.
College football coach.
Do you still have some of the trophies from back in the day?
I do. They're mostly in an attic. At my office, I've got a couple of little trophies that I think are meaningful to me, but most of them are just sitting in an attic, you know, upstairs. And occasionally when I go up there to hide one of Amy's presents for Christmas, I'll see them. But other than that, I don't really look at them.
What are some of the trophies that really mean a lot to you?
Well, one is a plaque that when I was inducted into the State Hall of Fame for golf, I won the Elotion Club Championship about 12 years ago. That was kind of cool, and the trophy is so spectacularly pretty that
I had
to show it off. So
yeah,
those are the two I've kind of got out.
What's that course like? I mean, it's been on TV now, so I think we can all talk about it. I've been there. You've been there. There are some that have been there, but there are some that might be listening that have not been there.
It just feels like you're not where you are. I mean, it almost feels to me like when I'm there that I'm in maybe Colorado or Utah sometimes. It's so hilly. Mm-hmm. And with such beautiful views and vistas and lakes and, God, it's just awesome. They did such a good job out there on that golf course. It's not a hard golf course. It really isn't. Like, if I was as good as I was in college, I would never shoot over par out there. And now they can make it hard if they want to. It's kind of like the Masters. It's not an overly hard golf course, but based on how the green speed that they have that day and where they put the pins, they can make it to where it's hard to shoot even par. But, you know, I mean, when you guys got guys as like Stan Payne, I know out there, he shoots in the 60s when he goes out there.
Mm-hmm.
William Clark, same thing. He shoots under par out there regularly. So, you know, it's not a super hard golf course, but it is a spectacular place.
And the views, I think you said it, you don't think you're in the state of Arkansas, but yet you're about 40 miles from downtown Little Rock.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just awesome. I mean, I haven't been out there in years. The last time I went out there, I played golf with Sam Alley, and I can't even remember who we were playing with. But we had a great time. But, yeah, it's just an unusual place.
When you were growing up and you watched golf on television, if this player was on, you were stopping whatever you had to do to watch. Who was it?
Jack Nicklaus. There's no doubt. I mean, I will never forget. I literally jumped up when I think it was Vern Lundquist did the yes, sir, when he made that putt on 17 at the Masters in 1986. I was as excited as Jack was, I think. I could not have been cheering harder for anyone. When he was on, I was watching. When Michael Jordan was on playing basketball, I was watching. When Tiger Woods is on now, even today, I'm watching.
Kind of hard to see Tiger go through what he's gone through with the injuries.
Yeah, it is. But gosh, man, what a testimony to his inner fortitude that he's been able to come back from all of those mm-hmm. injuries. The U.S. Open at Torrey Pines, the Masters in 3 years ago, I could not believe he won that. When he won the Tour Championship.
Right.
So, yes, it's hard to watch him, but we all go downhill at some point. The fact that he was able to come back and do what he's done has been one of the biggest thrills of my life to watch.
David, you're a father, and seeing your sons compete at the highest level in college, when they have success, you feel great for them. I think Charlie being able to see his dad in person, not through videos, but in person win at Augusta, I think that tops it off. I mean, I had tears in my eyes when I saw him come off of the 18th green in 2019 and put on the green jacket.
You know, wasn't it a cool full circle? Remember when Earl Woods, mm-hmm. when Tiger walked off the 18th green, his dad gave him what Tiger calls his big bear hug in 1997 when he won his first Masters. And then to see him as a father be able to embrace Charlie as his son in 2019. Wow. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
It was pretty special. All right. Best golf course David White's ever played.
I think it's either Muirfield Village in Dublin, Ohio, where they play the Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
That's Jack Nicklaus's course. I played the U.S. Amateur there. I played the U.S. Junior Amateur there. So either that or Congressional in Washington, D.C., where I played the U.S. Open, and that was fantastic. I've gone back 5 or 6 times and played and loved it every time.
What is an open course like?
An open course is the one that I played. Congressional is really big. You know, it's just big. Everything just feels big. The fairways, not that the fairways are wide, but everything about the place just feels really big. The grass is deep when you get out of the fairway. The greens are usually fast.
Mm-hmm.
When we played at the U.S. Open in 97 at Congressional, they were running, at the time was fast. They were running probably 11 and a half, which was fast, and they were undulating. So it was awesome. And then, the spectators being around the holes and framing the holes actually makes playing in a tournament like that easier, because it's like you're hitting into the middle of a picture.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. But yeah, those courses are all very similar. I love the grass of the Northeast and the North. The bent grass fairways and the fescue rough is so fun for me. I've always loved that. So
I love bent grass greens.
Yeah, most of the open courses are that.
Yeah,
they
are. You just got to find a way to qualify. 97, when Tiger had won the Masters playing at the U.S. Open, could you hear the Tiger roars at time?
Yeah, it was unreal. It really was. I mean, I've never heard anything like it. When we had a rain delay at one point, and when we went back out, the crowd was like at a fever pitch. They wanted the thing to start again so bad, and they started the "Taste Great, Less Filling" chant. I think that was a Miller Lite commercial or something.
I think so.
The whole atmosphere of a U.S. Open is so special, and having Tiger there for, I guess that was his first year as a pro, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So having him there made it even better.
Fantasy foursome, you and three others, living or deceased, that you could play a round of golf with, who would it be?
Golly, fantasy foursome. That is the hardest question you've asked me so far. Well, Tiger would be in it. So it'd be me and Tiger. Ben Hogan would be in it. Mm. And probably Bobby Jones.
What questions would you ask Bobby Jones?
Do you think right now, the question I would ask him, do you like the change they made at 13 on your golf course? I would want to know. I watching the Masters, it made me wonder if Bobby Jones is rolling over in his grave that they can't reach the green in 2, that there's not even a decision to be made. Of course,
some did, though.
Some did, but it felt like the way that it was designed was that everybody, even if you had a 3-wood in your hand, had an opportunity. And I'm not saying it's a bad change. I just would want to ask him, what does he think?
Yeah, I think those are some good questions. David, man, thanks so much for the time. And we wish continued success for your family and all of your athletes that you have running around that house.
Thanks, Trey.
I want to thank David White for coming in and taking time out of his busy schedule so that we could record this episode of From the Shortgrass. I want to thank also Blair Allen and Matthew Allen, Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Groups. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. When you need a place to stay overnight, make sure it's a Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group property. How do you do that? Go to their website, bphotels.com. They've got a full list of their properties right there on their website. Make sure you stay at a Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel property for your next overnight stay. We're back to wrap it up after this.
This is Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. The economy is changing slowly but surely. The market is slowing down in a gradual slide. Not an emergency yet. The sky is not falling, but a change is coming. When times are good, auctions make buyers compete to buy at the highest market value. When the economy gets tough, auctions force buyers to make a purchase decision. Either way, auctions get the highest return for a seller and a strong deal for a buyer. With an experienced auction company, it's a simple process. Go to BlackmanAuctions.com for more information. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
With all the decisions you need to make about what to do in El Dorado, finding a place to stay is an easy one. The Haywood is uniquely positioned to make your stay one to treasure. Located in the historic Union Square District of El Dorado, the Haywood offers luxurious accommodations that feature contemporary, colorful rooms with high-quality bedding, comfortable baths with walk-in showers, and a spacious workspace with stylish plantation shutters that are unique additions to the stunning decor in a non-smoking environment. Make the Haywood your home away from home the next time time you visit El Dorado.
That's it for this edition of From the Short Grass. Thanks as always for listening. And remember, when you find a ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I'll see you from the short grass.
You've been listening to From the Short Grass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.